Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hello, this is Jessica, and I'm here with
Dr. Shuttle Shah. I'm Vice President of the Long Island Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, Chapter 2, encompassing Suffolk County, Nassau County, Brooklyn, and Queens, and I'm a longtime Syosset resident.
I'm Dr. Mark Wells, and I'm a general pediatrician at Cohen Children's Medical Center, and one of the areas that I'm extremely interested in is bullying and bullying prevention.
I'm Dr. David Fagan. I'm also a pediatrician at Cohen's Children's Medical Center and vice chairman of pediatrics there. And as Dr. Wells said, he and I co-chair the American Academy of Pediatrics Chapter 2 Committee on Bullying Prevention.
And I thank everybody here for coming to us on Turn the Page podcast. As Dr. Shah had said, we have known him and his family for years, and we were thrilled when he approached us with this opportunity to talk to you. We've literally seen his family grow up at Syosset. So welcome. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
So let's jump right into it. By the time that this airs, it's going to be the end of the school year. So kids are out for summer, but bullying is not specifically just a school occurrence.
Right. There would be bullying that will go on all summer at summer camps. So it's not limited to the school year.
So how common is bullying with Long Island's children?
I don't have specific statistics, but it's very common. I get calls very often from my own practice for children who have been bullied in school from elementary age through high school. And based on the type of bullying, which we'll talk about, which is traditional and cyberbullying, it can vary in its extremes and its outcomes.
There's no reason to think that bullying on Long Island is any different in terms of prevalence than the rest of the nation. And when you look at the literature, you'll see anywhere from 10 to 20% of students will have been report having been bullied.
It's interesting that you say that. With that percentage, how many don't report it? I mean, obviously you have no numbers on it, but is there an estimation on how many people just don't say anything?
It's probably larger than we think. A lot of children are afraid to report it because of retaliation. They're afraid to tell their parents. They feel some self-loathing. There's all kinds of emotions that can be accompanied by the bullying, so that it often does not come, you know, to anybody's attention. And there are certain other subgroups besides, you know, children who have special needs, children who belong to the LGBT community, people who wear eyeglasses. I mean, these are all kids that are affected sometimes more than the traditional usual population in the school.
So with that, what should a parent look out for if they're worried that their child is being bullied?
So one of the most common things that we will talk to parents about is things like all of a sudden school avoidance, or out of the blue the child is now complaining frequently about stomach aches or headaches, or I don't want to go to school because this hurts or that hurts. The child coming home with less money, you know, or the child asking mom or dad for more money because they have to give money to the bully each day. Those are some of the subtle things.
Also, their mood effects. I mean, you may see your child's not the usual child they have been in the past. They sit in their room. They don't want to engage themselves with any other children. They don't want to get involved in anything. And they're sort of shunning, you know, their peers and any type of out-of-school activities.
So like a despondency.
Exactly.
Yes,
exactly.
Because I know that that's, you know, even as a parent myself, I mean, my kids are very young, you know, and I remember my own experiences as a child, you know, and what I experienced when I felt, you know, uncomfortable in a situation. But I know that, you know, different children, they absorb and react in different ways.
Exactly. And just in the beginning, it's important to set a framework for, you know, what is bullying versus what is normal childhood behavior.
And would you like to talk about that a little?
Absolutely. That's why I brought it up. So it's important to understand that there is a perceived imbalance of power. There is an aggressor, the bully, and someone, another child.
So what is normal childhood behavior versus bullying?
So, I mean, you know, children will horseplay. Children will play, you know, we've all seen children playing around on the playground and pushing each other. But the difference with bullying is there's this imbalance of power. There's an aggressor and someone who the bully perceives as being weaker, and typically they are not friends, versus you and I may be friends and we're just horseplaying. So that's a critical point in you know, defining what's bullying versus what's normal child play.
Well, also to add to that, kids who like joke around or make fun, if both parties are laughing, it's not bullying. If one party, who is the bully, is aggressive and not empathetic, and there's contempt for the other child, and that's really explained in the actions and the wordage that the child would use against the other child.
So if you don't mind me asking, it's interesting that you mention people who aren't friends. There is bullying within friend groups. We actually have a very good children's book called, I think, My Secret Bully, and I call it the just kidding types of bullying. Would you like to talk a little bit about that? I mean, when you're being bullied by someone who's not your friend, but when you're being bullied by someone who you think is your friend, who should be a safe person, I feel like you know, that's also a different thing that parents might want to look out for, because they'd be like, hey, you guys are friends, you're just joking around. But sometimes that balance of power might be a little bit more difficult to see when it's a friend.
Relational aggression, which would be a good example of that, is usually among girls, where all of a sudden everybody's great friends and suddenly we don't want you sitting with us, we don't want you being with us, and that leaves a kid blindsided as, you know, you are my friend, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And that can really be pretty traumatic, you know, for a child to be suddenly ostracized and, you know, left alone without
ghosted,
anybody.
Ghosted, if you will.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, you and I could be friends and I bring you into a larger social group, but then, say, the leader of that group says to me, you know, we don't like her. You know, if you want to be with us, you can't be friends with her. And then, as Mark said, that child gets excluded, no longer asked to sit with the group, no longer invited to participate in, you know, whatever the kids are doing after school.
Barbara Coloroso has written a really good book that for parents would be really good. It's the bullied, and the not so innocent bystander. And, you know, I've read it, and it's really very interesting how, you know, she kind of classifies the bully and his group as his or her henchman.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can, without the use of bystander. And it's a very interesting dynamic of how she describes all the dynamics of what goes on among the bullied population, as it were.
I recall a children's book called Bully Blockers, which was trying to encourage children not to be a bystander. I would imagine, you know, there might be some who feel like powerlessness against standing up to the bullies. And, you know, one would hope that you would block the bullies, as the book discusses.
And so we use the term upstander. And by far, that's the largest, you know, group of children. They may not be, they're hopefully not bullies then, and hopefully not bullied, but we don't want them standing by and witnessing bullying. We want them to be empowered to be upstanders, and that's a big part of education that goes on in school, to be an upstander and talk to an adult about what they're seeing.
Absolutely. So what are some long-term psychological or health consequences about surrounding bully children?
Well, it could be truancy, where the kid really doesn't want to go to school and it becomes an issue. Depression, drug use, alcohol use as they become older. And it transitions into adulthood. The long-term effects are not just for middle school and high school, but it affects relationships later in their lives. It affects the way they function in society.
Yeah, I mean, the literature is very clear. We in the United States, we have a good two decades of literature on both the long-term psychological or mental health effects of bullying, as well as the physical health effects in terms of things like hypertension, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, which may be related to obesity because of being bullied.
Like stress eating, mm-hmm. almost, eating for finding the comfort in the food. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I wouldn't have thought, but that does make a lot of sense.
There's also hormonal. I mean, it's cortisol, which is that fight or flight hormone. Chronic bullying, it causes chronic cortisol, which then causes suppression of any type of response that the child can make. And they've actually done MRIs and of kids who've been bullied and kids, people who've had physical pain, and it's the same. On MRI, you can't tell the difference between being bullied chronically and pure physical pain.
That's really interesting and upsetting. when we're talking about different types of bullying, and I know when I started this, you know, I mentioned schools out, but aside from just summer camp bullying, it used to be, you know, before the age of social media. You would go home and you would hopefully have the safety in your house, you know, to kind of comfort you if you were being bullied. You know, maybe you'd get a prank call or two, which was not, you know, pleasant, but there were ways to trace that. But now with social media, you could literally, and there's many positive things about social media, so don't think I'm being down on social media, but it doesn't, but the contact doesn't end when you leave school. What is cyberbullying? How is it different in terms of the impact on the child compared to traditional bullying that may have experienced?
So one of the biggest differences with cyberbullying is the aspect of anonymity. You may not know who who is doing the bullying. Because, you know, you can come up with whatever fake handle for a Twitter account or a Snapchat account or
there's
an Instagram account.
There's been a lot of that. You know, there's been a few stories of a group of bullies creating, like, a fake profile for somebody who says they have a crush on their target. So that is, it is a common thing, I guess, that seems to be.
Yeah, well, the problem with cyberbullying, it goes on 24/7. So traditional bullying kind of ends at school when you go home, get off the bus, and cyberbullying just keeps going on and on and on. And really, they found that the effects of both together are the most detrimental for children.
Yeah, it's sad, to say the least.
Well, that's why parents need to monitor their children's activities online. They need to know the passwords. They need to know how to get a screenshot if there's something that's very repetitive, because a one-shot, I hate you, is not going to do it. But if it's continuously, then it becomes cyberbullying. And then if there's obviously a threat on someone's life, it needs to be reported to the police.
Can repeated bullying, the effects on the children, has it been shown to make children aggressive or violent?
Yes, and as Mark said earlier, it carries on into adulthood. One statistic showed if you were a bully between sixth grade to ninth grade, by the time you're 24 years of age, you're more than 40% likely to have committed a crime and entered it into the judicial system. So the people who were bullies as early teens, bullying's most common in middle school. But those children who are bullies then go on to have increased incidence of domestic violence and abusive relationships. So it's not a rite of passage. It's not something that ends when you complete your teenage years. These behaviors are, in some cases, lifelong.
Also, you have to understand that there's the bully, and then there's the victim, and there's the bully victim. And that is the child that is most at risk for later occurrences of violence, and 75% of school shooters were bully victims.
The bullying curriculums in school, because there has been an amped up push to talk about bullying, and be it in health classes, be it in, you know, just different settings, assemblies. Do you think that it is an adequate curriculum to teach kids about bullying? How could it be improved? How could parents best supplement the education at home?
So the David Patterson, Governor Patterson, signed the what's known as DASA, the Dignity for All Students Act, back in 2010. It went into effect in 2012, and it requires every school district to implement a bullying curriculum and to identify one person within that district as the point person for these efforts. So, you know, if we go back over the last 5 to 6 years, there definitely has been an increase in the awareness of bullying within the school system.
And there's no way of, there's no oversight. So one really can't say, you know, which schools are doing it, which schools are not. I mean, I have a list of Nassau and Suffolk County DASA coordinators from the Long Island Coalition Against Bullying. And it's very difficult to say how much is taught and what do they actually, you know, do with it, you know, in each school, since there is no oversight. And private schools do not, are not affected by DASA. They are not mandated to have a DASA coordinator. That law is trying to be changed. And they've also added cyberbullying, that if it's done on the school grounds or off school grounds, it is still applicable to the DASA law.
That's good to hear, and I do hope that they're able to expand that into the private schools. Before, you, when you were talking about middle school being the most prevalent area for cyberbullying, but bullying in general, why do you think that that is? I happen to love the middle school age. I know it's kind of, some people feel a little crunchy about it because it is different, and it's definitely the time of the most transition, I think, in this short period of time. why middle school?
I think children at that developmentally at that age are both very impressionable and vulnerable at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you know about all these books, the dorky kid, and then the Diary of a Wimpy Kid, and it's all like these middle school students. It's just that, for some reason, that whole transition from elementary school into middle school, there's just so much change going on that, you know, I think the hormones are flying and they're just trying to assert themselves in any way they can.
I once went to a mini conference on tweens, which was the buzzword back then. I don't know if it still is, but they called them hormones on legs.
Exactly. You know, we can all think of, a 12-year-old who looks like a 16-year-old and a 12-year-old who looks like a 9 or 10-year-old because there's such a, you know, range in when children develop.
Yeah, that is true, and it really is. It's just, as before we're talking, it's so much transition, and maybe that has a lot to do with it.
And again, in middle school, the traditional bullying is what happens most. Cyberbullying is more prevalent in high school as the traditional bullying kind of starts to wane.
Is it because they generally have more access to devices, or we're not sure?
Could well be. They all have an iPhone. They've all got an iPad. They all have computer access. And there's so many social media platforms, whether it's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or whatever else happens.
Snapchat,
to be
Tumblr, whatever and there's going to be a new one next week probably.
Right, and parents may not be aware of all the platforms that are out there, which is another reason why parents need to have the conversation with their child about bullying and about specifically cyberbullying, and hopefully foster that open relationship.
So having a conversation about bullying and cyberbullying.
Exactly. So having that conversation between the parent and the middle school student, high school student about cyberbullying and all the platforms that are out there, and hopefully foster an open relationship so that the child, the teen, is comfortable sharing this information with the parent, and it doesn't become an adversarial, I'm your parent, you must do this type of situation.
And it's interesting because, you know, teens, they're children, but they're children not children at the same time. And, you know, I mean, I feel like you want them to be able to stand, but if they're wobbling, you want them to feel safe to come to you.
Exactly.
About it.
And I think that today, more than ever, I think parents and children, they need to have a time where there's open conversation, like the dinner table, with zero electronic devices present. I think that, I don't know how many times people go out and they're all at dinner and everybody's on their phone. And I think that at home, there should be a certain time where everybody has the opportunity to talk. How is your day? What's going on? Did anything happen today?
I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
Yeah, one of the things that we as pediatricians counsel on is the just overall amount of screen time that children and teenagers should be exposed to. And so the rule of thumb really is less than 2 hours a day of anything with a screen. So your phone, your iPad, a tablet. I mean, unless it's specifically for doing your homework.
Right, and actually, I know a lot of schools now are giving Chromebooks to kids, as you know, in middle school and above. So it's kind of difficult to get away from that screen time.
Mm-hmm.
I know with my own children, and they're young; they really are. But I want to set the precedent when they're young. You know, we talk a lot about how things make us feel because I want them to know that when they're, and again, my kids are young; they're 4-year-old twins. But, you know, I feel like sometimes people think that a 4-year-old can't express a feeling or, you know, can't reap something from something they see. So even if we're reading a book or we're watching like Wreck-It Ralph, for instance, you know, like where a character's being bullied or someone's being not too nice, you know, I'll say, oh, well, what did you think about that? You know, did you think that they were being nice to her or were they being mean? You know, how do you think that made her feel? So, I mean, for myself, I know I've tried to set that precedent very, very young. So, you know, hopefully as they go into the school where they're, you know, meeting more kids, they'll be able to recognize it.
Exactly. We want children to be, we want to instill resiliency from a very early age.
So how can parents best prevent help a bully child, particularly in the cyberbullying where, things might be going on behind the scenes? Is limiting the screen time the answer? Is reporting it to, you know, if you see that it's happening, like what about reporting it to the other child's parent?
Generally, it's not advisable to contact the other child's parent because that's just going to create more of a hostile environment because very few parents want to believe that their child is capable of that type of behavior. So it's probably best that if the parent sees material on screen that is offensive on a continuous basis, take a screenshot. And again, with DASA, you can certainly discuss it with the school guidance counselor. And I think that if the children, you know, they should have separate conversations with the guidance counselor. And the most important thing, I think, today is the bully is the one who's kind of neglected. The bully needs to be remediated. They need to be taught empathy. They need to be taught how to respond positively to other people and not negatively. And that, I think, is very remiss in a lot of the programs that are in the schools.
I do agree with you. I think as a whole, I think empathy is probably one of the most important things that you can reap from the experience of growing up, because you're gonna, you know, if you don't have empathy as a child and you grow up to be an adult that can't experience that.
Yeah, just on the flip side of that, a lot of bullies, when they talk about their family environment, they come from families where there's violence, where there's domestic violence, where there's drug abuse, where there's, you know, all these negative attributes that then the child is learning, and it's not really obviously best interest of the child, but this is where they're coming from.
This is what they know.
Yeah, and maybe as you say, not neglecting the bully, perhaps that could sort of that could be opened up in trying to bring attention to the bully and talk to them. I definitely think that's a very good point. Not to address the parent directly, you know, and I'm sure like parents out there immediately, like their knee-jerk gut reaction is going to be like, what? Like your child, But I think, like, you know, legally, even having that middle person there whose job it is to diffuse both situations is probably, like, for the safety of everybody and for the well-being of everyone. Mm-hmm.
This conversation has been absolutely outstanding. But the question I want to sort of return to is Dr. Fagan's comment about the upstander. Both of you have been very active in running a bullying conference for several years, specifically Dr. Wells. When you approach these students in their middle school years and talking about bullying, how do you promote the concept of being an active upstander? Because I think that that's really important for parents to know so they can empower their children to see and to report something that they see. Because obviously, that, you know, if you see something, say something is something we talk about all the time, but the kids are more likely to know who's being bullied and who the bulliers are.
You know, at our conferences, which is twice a year, I mean, in October I host sixth graders and in May I host eighth graders because that's transitional times for both. And, you know, we do talk about, you know, bystanders, upstanders, and things to do. And, you know, what I say to them is you are the ambassadors that go back to your school, and hopefully you will bring this with you and pay it forward, and the educators that are with you will create a club or a program because, you know, I can't be everywhere. And it's hopefully it goes back to the school to start some sort of club or way to start, you know, educating these children. And I think the PTA would be another area where parents can learn about bullying and what to do with their children and how to address it and what, you know, they might be able to do to help their kids if that's been the case.
Yeah, there are typically upwards of 200 children at these conferences, and Hofstra University has been a great partner in hosting, allowing us to host. But one of the things that Dr. Wells does is he it's really like a QA with the children, the students, and ask who's been bullied, and he lets them talk about it. Who, you know, has anybody witnessed bullying, and what have you done about it? And that's, you know, the hands just they shoot up. And so, as he said, the opportunity then to again feel empowered to go back to the school, be the ambassadors, spread the word.
So, what your conference takes place twice a year at Hofstra. What is it called?
It's anti-bullying conference, the semi-annual anti-bullying conference.
It's a partnership between Hofstra and Chapter 2 of the American Academy of Pediatrics.
That's really fantastic.
Yeah. And I invite middle schools, and I've invited SIACID, and I've invited, you know, many schools. Some schools are interested, some not, but I plan to make sure that I get as many different middle schools involved as possible. I mean, I've reached over 2,000 kids so far through the conferences.
And that's pretty amazing. I know when Dr. Shaw first came to me about having, you know, people on the podcast, you know, we talked about how family-oriented our community is. You know, I think, would you like to elaborate on that?
Sure. And I think it's specifically because really across Long Island, but particularly here in Nassau County, we are so family-oriented. This is something that parents are really attuned to, but don't really have the tools to address. And I think that's part of the reason this podcast is actually really important. One of the other things that I wanted to talk about was, as the parent of a tween, it's really a fine line when you're talking to them. Even when you give yourself protected time and all the phones are sort of in the lockbox, there's a fine line between them acting like they're 10 and then they're acting like they're 25 the next minute. If you suspect that your child is being bullied and you want to create open communication with them, how do you best, other than creating a safe space, what are the actual words and tools you can use? Because one of the things I worry about is running the risk of the child saying, oh my God, now my parent thinks that I'm being bullied and I have to be even more quiet about this, because if I talk to them, they're going to try and do something about it, and that's going to make me even more embarrassed.
You know, I think it starts from a much, as you mentioned, Jessica, a much earlier age, and creating that environment, because, yeah, as Dr. Shah said, when you get to be, we'll use the term tween, they could be listening to you 1 second and yay-yay-yaying you, and the next second, again, acting like that loving six-year-old and not the 13 or 14-year-old.
You're describing one of my four-year-olds anyway. He rolls his eyes at me. So,
really, from starting from a very, very early age and creating that environment, whether it's bullying or anything, letting the child know that they – that you're there for them, that you're there to support them, mm-hmm. that they can come to you for anything. Because in many cases, the child will be suffering in silence for quite some time before they reach the point that they tell the parent. But if there is that supportive environment, hopefully that time will be far shorter, excuse me.
I think that if you're open with your children, although, I mean, I have a 38-year-old, a 34-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 5-year-old grandson, and they'll listen and roll their eyes, but ultimately they really do take it in, and it is there, and it will come out when it needs to.
That's good to hear.
And I think that, you know, as parents, I think, you know, role-playing, trying to help the child to understand that what the bully wants is a response. If you don't respond, it's gonna totally diffuse it because they're not getting what they want.
It's like you're feeding. They're hungry for the attention, and you're feeding it, and they're just gonna keep devouring the attention.
And if you role play with them and say, you know, walk up to the, you know, look them in the eye, you know, never touching, you know, don't say that to me, walk away. Or you can make a joke out of it. There's different role-playing methods that can be used to help the child diffuse the situation. And again, once the bully doesn't get what they want, they're going to either move on to someone else or just stop.
You know, one resource we haven't talked about is what the three of us do, and that's pediatricians. And parents should, you know, feel comfortable in utilizing their pediatrician as a resource. How do I talk to my child about bullying? Can I go to the school? And that's part of the impetus why Dr. Wells and I started this committee 5 or 6 years ago at this point, because we really didn't see pediatricians playing their part. It was really the role at the time, mostly educators and some the law enforcement community to some extent, but not the pediatricians.
We have guidelines, and it's called Bright Futures, which is put out by the American Academy of Pediatrics. And each age group, there's specific questions. And I know I ask every kid when during their physical exam, you know, have you been bullied? Is anybody not nice to you? You know, put it, depending on the age, put it in, you know, words that they understand.
I think it's really important to know that this is something that pediatricians are trained to talk about, because I don't know that parents would automatically think that. I mean, you know, and I'm humbled and embarrassed to say that that's not what the first thing that I would have thought of was. So please, thank you. Please, I want to thank you guys so much for bringing that to our listeners.
You know, a simple question that if a pediatrician doesn't want to go directly to the bullying, do you feel safe in school?
That's a good one.
Yeah. And that can be a conversation starter, an opener. And in many cases, you know, one of the things that I love about pediatrics is that this opportunity to build a long-term relationship with a child and a family. So if I'm seeing a child since birth, and now the child is 8, 9 years old, they've seen me, you know, at least once a year that they're going to remember for many years at that point, and hopefully then they're comfortable speaking to me.
And you probably have a baseline also, like for physical things, you know, so if there's something that's just not right, that, you know, you've got that in the charts, you have a baseline, so it's probably a bit of a window.
Mm-hmm. One of the things we touched upon, but I don't think we've spent a lot of time on, is the fact that children with special health care needs are at particularly high risk for being bullied. There are a lot of parents out there who are listening to this podcast who probably have a child with at least one form or another of chronic illness. How is the concept of bullying different for them? Other than the fact that they have an illness and they might be perceived as different from the regular group, how else, I guess, are they put, how else are they at risk for being bullied? And then the next question I have is, I know both of you run actually a medical consultation service for bullying at Cohen's Children's Medical Center. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the experiences that you've had through that medical service.
So just before we talk about the consultation service, which Dr. Wells spearheaded, just on the basis, and Dr. Wells touched on this earlier, just on the basis of the child being different, you know, whether it's a child with Down syndrome, a child with cerebral palsy, it could be an obese child, and anything that makes that child stand out and look even slightly different than her peer group is going to make that child more susceptible to bullying.
I mean, the top groups, I mean, the number one group that's bullied is the LGBT community. Okay. Number two is the obese community, kids who are overweight.
Yeah.
Number three are kids who have autism, what's the spectrum. And then come, you know, the kid who wears eyeglasses. And, you know, these kids are at higher risk for long-term problems based on the bullying. And really all we can do is try and help them through this, you know, counseling people, discussing it with educators, parents, and anyone else that's involved with them. It's because some of these kids really don't know how to respond. They don't have the capability of responding, you know, in a way that would be meaningful.
You guys also mentioned, and I think Dr. Wells said this, that through the bullying conference, one of the key things to do is to empower the other students because you can't be everywhere. What resources are out there for parents who might make that appointment with the pediatrician but might have to wait a week or two before that appointment comes up? What are trusted resources? You know, we talk about how there's so much information on the internet and therefore there's no information on the internet because there's junk sites and then there's really good sites. So how could you direct parents to some appropriate resources that you think are accurate and that provide solid advice to sort of begin this conversation before they go to their educator and go to their pediatrician?
And are any of them Long Island specific?
Well, I mean, online, the AAP.org, I mean, the American Academy has, you know, enough information about bullying, which is trustworthy.
And then specifically, the Academy has a parent website. You know, it's information that's geared towards parents, and that's called healthychildren.org. And then here on Long Island, you have...
There's Long Island Coalition Against Bullying. It's basically Nassau County because they just don't have enough people to cover Suffolk as well. I'm on the board there. And what we do is we take calls from parents. They find us on Facebook or any other type. They're all on the social media platforms. And so parents can call, and I or... you know, some of the other board members who are trained, and I've trained residents as well to answer these calls, will speak to the parents, give them advice, you know, what they need to do, you know, and specifically if there's any question of harming themselves, you know, they're referred immediately to a psych emergency room or to a mental health professional. Then we also offer a smile package, which is kind of nice because the parent fills out what the child likes. And we'll create a package for them of, you know, either art materials or, you know, whatever it is that they like and just send it to them to make them feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's CAPS.
CAPS stands for Child Abuse Prevention Services. It's started 30 years ago or so as a nonprofit. And over the last decade, a little longer, they've branched into bullying prevention. So they within CAPS is the bullying prevention team, and CAPS is, their website is CAPSLI, CAPSLongisland.org, and again they have a hotline, a tremendous amount of online resources for parents. And you know, can there ever be too much information out there? I don't think so, because you know, you could go to one place, I could go to another place. A lot of the information is the same, but the more available and accessible it is for families, the better.
There's also
Long Island Crisis Center.
The Long Island Crisis Center, where if, you know, a child is in, it might be thinking of hurting themselves, they can call in. If a child belongs to the LGBT community, Pride for Youth in Belmore is very helpful. They have counselors. They also have a Friday evening. They have a sort of a get-together so that, you know, these kids can be with other kids and they can talk about their experiences and sort of help
each
other.
In a safe environment.
In a safe environment.
Yeah, where, you know, where they know that people have similar experiences or...
You know, the federal government has a website, stopbullying.gov. There's good bullying information on the Nassau County Department of Health website as well as the Suffolk County Department of Health website. So there's a lot of good available information for families.
The Nassau County there is, if you go to nassaucounty.gov, there is a new bullying section with lots of resources and, you know, places to go. And like I had mentioned before, for parents and educators, Barbara Coloroso, it's The Bully, The Bullied, and The Not-So-Innocent Bystander, which is, you know, a really good book explaining, you know, the what goes on in the minds of these kids and, you know, more about each individual.
So before we wrap up, and I want to thank Dr. Shaw, Dr. Fagan, and Dr. Wells for being here talking about this very serious topic. What are there books, documentaries, resources? We definitely talked about a lot of online and centers but are there resources like physical that parents can you can recommend to parents to learn more about bullying?
Well, because I just mentioned that book by Barbara Coloroso.
Right. Yes.
And there's another one, Don't Press Send. It's by Katie Duffy Schumacher. It's about cyberbullying.
Well, so on all the websites we've mentioned, in addition to the content that they have there, they have links to, you know, to other sites and other resources.
Well, I want to thank everybody so much for coming here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. And we're going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.